This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is an iFanboy Books Bloat On, The Rattler. Special iFanboy podcast. It's a Booksplode on The Rattler. That's a podcast where we talk about one collected edition or graphic novel, or original graphic novel, something bigger than regular comic size. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Hello.
And this podcast is brought to you by our patrons, the ones who gave enough to add these shows to the docket.
They spoke up and they said they wanted it, and so we did it.
Every month you get a Booksplode or you get a Talksplode. This month is our Booksplode and we're doing The Rattler. And actually, we're going to throw a little bit of a curveball. Because last time we did a Booksplode, we said we're going to talk about books we hardly recommend. This month we decided, let's talk about a book none of us have read but features creators we really like and see what happens.
Yeah. I think I would still heartily. That's the word.
We'll find out. We don't know. That's the thing. We don't know what each other think. It's the point is there are no rules. We might say there are rules. We don't have to follow them.
So. Okay, but to be honest, I've known Connor for 20 years, and even if he says there are no rules, there are rules. let's not fool ourselves.
So let's caveat this one, Ron, with a full disclosure that you know the writer of this book.
Well, I know the writer. I know the whole. I know the whole entire credit, well, the credit team. But
I mean, you went to high school with the writer of the book.
Yes, so Jason McNamara is the writer of The Rattler, and he and I grew up in the same hometown, went to the same high school, weren't friends.
I did not know that. I know that you knew Hinkle.
He's older than me by a couple of years, and we had a couple of choice interactions over the years. Well, he worked at the comic book store I shopped at in middle school.
He always made fun of your books, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. He would berate me for reading X-Men. And then later on, when I moved to San Francisco, we bumped into each other at Isotope because he lived in San Francisco. I did not know that. And he's since moved from San Francisco. So have I. But so we've known each other for a very long time. And he's a good guy. And he's very interesting.
I didn't know that.
And before we get into the book itself, another little fun story. So when we were talking about what book we were going to do, we were having our discussion. We're throwing names of books out. And as often happens in our conversations, we diverge into talking about G.I. Joe. And then immediately Josh said, what about The Rattler? And I thought he was talking about some G.I. Joe graphic novel.
What's funny is that every time I hear The Rattler, I hear it in an Australian accent, a bad Australian, The Rattler. Like, just, that's all.
No, but I
hear.
Really did. I really thought until I looked it up that it was some G.I. Joe story about a guy, Rattler pilot. I was very excited.
The Blue A-10 Warthog.
Yeah, not that I wasn't excited to read this book, because we've talked a lot about Greg Hinkle's work in the last year with Airboy, but I was really hoping it was going to be a G.I. Joe story about the Rattler pilot. Anyway.
So right away you're coming in at a negative.
Right away, guys. I was disappointed. No. So let's talk. This is an original graphic novel, and Ron, why don't you give them a quick history? This was kickstarted, correct?
Yeah, Jason McNamara and Greg Hinkle, who I'm also friends with from my time in San Francisco, met in San Francisco at the Isotope and collaborated on it as a graphic novel. Jason's got a lot of great ideas for graphic novels, and he's done a couple. I feel like I've talked about some of the other Jason's work. He did The Martian Confederacy with, I forget the artist's name. Anyway, so Jason prefers the graphic novel format versus the monthly kind of thing. He's done more of that stuff. Paige Braddock, he worked with previously on The Martian Confederacy. And Greg Hinkle was an up-and-comer. This is before they started working on this, before Airboy, before he started working on Airboy with James Robinson. And they went the Kickstarter route, and it was a successful Kickstarter. They, you know, got it out there, got out in a lot of hands, did very well. And that got the attention of Image Comics, and who then published it.
Was this finished before Airboy?
This was finished before Airboy.
Is it a coincidence that James Robinson makes a cameo appearance in this book?
On the third and last page.
I feel like he finished it. He had started Airboy when he was finishing that. You know what I mean? Okay. I think the two overlapped, you know?
All right.
Yeah, no, they pitched it for $4,600 on Kickstarter, and they raised over $16,000.
Hmm. Yeah. Dreams do come true. All right, let's talk about the book itself. Rattler opens with a harrowing situation in which a young couple, their car breaks down in the middle of nowhere, and they have no food. The car is in bad shape. They've got no supplies, no provisions. A truck comes by, stops. So a woman gets out and offers to help tow to the nearest gas station. They chain their car to the back of her truck. She needs the guy to push and the girl to steer the car, and then he pushes her out of the ditch, and then the truck takes off, dragging the girl and the car with it. And then there's an accident. Anyway, basically it ends with the girl is gone. The guy's left on the side of the road, and the woman he's going to give a ring to is now gone. And we cut to many years later. The man he's now middle-aged, and he's a victim's rights advocate, a rather strident one, doing a TV interview, and that's the start of this book.
It's basically the Kiefer Sutherland vehicle, Vanish. The Vanishing, which is a remake, I believe. It isn't, but it's very sort of the similar beginning to that. What's interesting is that we're doing this in November, and I finished. I was like, oh, we probably should have done that for October, because it's sort of a bit of a horror thriller.
Yes.
It's interesting that we were talking about how it was done mostly before Airboy. A lot of times when you find a new artist, find this works with music too, you find a new artist you really like. So say you take Hinkle on Airboy, and you're like, wow, this guy really popped out fully formed. This is great. And then sometimes you go back to their earlier stuff and you'll look at it and go, oh, that you can see that's earlier, that it's not as polished. But like, it's the same guy. Yeah. Like the art is fully at the level that it was for Airboy throughout this whole thing, which I thought was really interesting. One of the things that would happen is that there would be a character who would show up and they'd switch scenes a lot, like to cut between different places. And I'd have to flip back to see like, wait, is this the guy from the other thing? And I can always tell like who the people were. And you know, you guys know from reading comic books for a long time, that's like a really big deal, especially if we're not talking about something with costumes.
He's really, really good. And we talked about it a lot with Airboy. And as we just talked about, this was book sort of done at the same time. He's really good, and I hate to use the cartoonist phrase, but he's more of a cartoonist than he is a traditional sort of comic books artist. But he's a really, really good cartoonist.
He's using, you know, basically like caricature to emphasize, you know, features that will help us recognize who the people are, and, you know, may or may not tell you something about, you know, what kind of person he wants you to think they are or something like that. But, you know, it's all rooted in reality. It's not cartoony in the sense that it's unrealistic. It's just that features are exaggerated.
So noses are bigger, mustaches are big.
But the sort of underdrawings, the cars, the buildings, that's all 100% real. The anatomy is all 100% there. But it's just using the tools to sort of help us tell emotions and know who we're looking at. And there's a lot of really sort of interesting looking people in this book who are interesting characters as they're written also. Just very fringy type folk. How's that?
Yeah.
That are sort of all throughout this, and it's really super fascinating. The other thing that is, the book is in black and white except for blood.
little splashes of color, which the more I see that, and that's not they're not the first people to do that, but I really like that as a device, especially when it happens later rather than earlier.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And the idea of like, okay, this is a black and white book. Oh, no, there's a splash of color. Cool. They thought about it. You know, like, I like that.
And it doesn't show up until like you're well into it, and you know what, like when it first shows up, sort of halfway through the book, character gets his thumb cut off. Basically, you kind of don't notice it. And then later I noticed there's a lot of red, and I was like, wait a minute, when did that happen? So I flipped back through it. That was one of the things for me, is that I kept flipping back, and not in a bad way. Just like, oh, look what you've done. You know, like, oh, cool. I didn't even notice it happening, but it was happening.
I didn't even notice. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I read a lot of comics. You guys had just said it, and I was like, that happened? And I opened the book, and there was a giant, you know, bloodbath, yeah. And I didn't even recognize.
But it sort of slowly grows in volume.
It's a really cool device, but also I think it's utilitarian in a way, because in black and white, blood is really hard to represent.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's near black. When you turn blood black and white, it just looks like black.
I'm sure that was a Kickstarter stretch goal.
Yeah. If we hit 10,000, we'll give you one color. 20,000, you get blue. So I was really into this at the beginning. You know, it's a sort of very harrowing crime that we just discussed. And then we meet the guy who's a kind of a dick, but you get it because he's has something horrible happen to him. And he's been hounding this guy who's getting a release from prison who's a rapist. And he's... the guy shows up at his house with a gun, and I was really, really into it. And then the supernatural stuff started happening, and I was like a little disappointed, but in the end, it's a horror, as you said, it's a horror thriller, so I was okay, but I was really kind of wondering what the book would have been like without the ghost element to it. I think would have been my ultimate takeaway.
And it's interesting because I was left wondering, because they never explain the ghost element.
Right.
Right? And so I really
wonder...
It had
to be real, because it doesn't work as a hallucination. He wouldn't have been able to do all the things he did.
Yeah.
So it has to be.
I am trying to figure out a way to make it work, though, as just a hallucination.
Right.
To this moment. Like, like he just like had worked something out.
Well, maybe.
You know, like subconsciously for whatever reason. Because it's all he's been thinking about for, you know, 30 years or whatever. And he spent all the time around Chantal.
Right.
So he might have picked something up along that time. I don't know.
Listen, by not explaining it, he gives you that option. If you can work it out in your head, then it can just be his just complete... Because the guy is unhinged.
Yes, he is.
And one of the challenges of this book is that he's the protagonist. And I kind of wasn't rooting for him because he was
an asshole. Yeah.
But he also wasn't wrong.
He wasn't wrong, but he was just... It manifested in him being a dick to everybody. And I was just kind of like, well, I don't really care if you find justice. You're a jerk. But then we started meeting a bunch of different characters, and you know, I like the sheriff a lot, Sheriff Rodriguez or whatever. It was the sheriff or whatever. He's the lawman with the big bushy mustache
guy. Yeah.
And then you know,
you like a lawman with a mustache, Connor.
That's a character that Connor is predisposed to like.
And then the rockabilly guy. I mean, there was a lot of interesting characters we met. So I was fine, not necessarily liking
the rockabilly guy. Was great.
Yeah. I gotta tell you. I mean, did we give a spoiler warning? Or
yeah, okay. Spoiler warning.
We should.
Yeah, we'll give a spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler warning. We're talking about what happens in the book. Bear with us. But when the twist happened in the last third of the book, basically the premise of the book is this guy. You know, as we mentioned, the guy, his girlfriend is abducted. Later on, he becomes an expert in those kind of crimes. He's still looking for her. He still believes she's out there. He goes a little loco, starts hearing her talk to him through dead people, and then he goes off trying to find her. And his assistant, or you know, coworker, or some working relationship, who's also who he's been sleeping with, kind of follows after him, tries to find him. And that becomes the twist, is that, you know, is that basically this girl and her mother are the ones who captured his girlfriend, and, you know, and that, you know, the whole thing. When that twist happens and the rockabilly guy gets it, I was like, oh,
yeah,
like
it's a good murder.
Such emotional resonance. I didn't see it coming. It wasn't telegraph. Like, and like you, Josh, I flip back and I'm like, okay, I see it leading there, but I didn't see that moment coming. And the way he went by getting under a car and having the jack knocked out and getting crushed by the car, and having both the girl, both the woman and her mother jump on the car to push it down.
That was didn't need to do that. He's already, blood. And then you just
didn't
jump
see
on the
that
hood.
Chantal was doing it until I went back and looked, and I was like, "Oh, she jumped on the hood too."
Yeah,
like there's just a lot going on, and you kind of had to pay for it. And the way that is drawn, like she crunches down on the hood, and the mom is pushing down on the mirror, and that is grim. Also, that truck drawing is spectacular.
Yeah,
I just want to point that. That's a really well drawn truck.
So they were kidnapping women to give her friends, right? Is that what it was? Because it wasn't like normally in these situations it's some.
There were other women who were alive.
Yeah. Normally in this situation, it's some sort of psychosexual male kidnapper, but here it's a pair of women. And so it was to give the daughter friends when she was a kid, right? Was that what it was?
You know what, as I had noticed, too, is that, like, so I started reading it and then waited, like, a week to come back and finish. So I didn't have I didn't have it in my head that the mother was the same character from the beginning.
Yeah, she was.
Like, it didn't occur to me right away. But I did notice when I read the beginning that the person driving the truck was a woman. And I was like, well, that's unusual.
Right.
That's against the trope of this kind of thing. To have, like, a middle-aged woman who hasn't aged, apparently.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
To have a middle-aged woman, you know, sort of do that. And then, you know, the end is basically Psycho.
Well, she's... I'm looking at the back and the front. Yeah, she's got a lot more lines on her face.
Yeah, no, it's not even much of a criticism. It's just that she's sort
of... If it was in color, Josh, you'd see she'd have silver hair now.
That's true. But they didn't hit that stretch goal.
That's true. They only got the one color. You know, 25,000, you get red, so this, blue, and silver.
Yeah, this book with hair color in it would have been, like, off the charts. It might be too much.
But this is a really well-done, sort of disturbing thriller, great, you know, self-contained story. And I like that Jason McNamara, the writer, likes this format because when it's done well, it's really well done.
Yeah.
But and also, I failed to note that.
Like that?
Yeah, I did. Formatted well. It does go back to echo to Jason berating me at the comic book store when I was in middle school. Jason has a dark side to his personality. I mean, he is a big fan of horror movies, Halloween, Michael Myers, that sort of thing. He has a Michael Myers mask that he wears every Halloween. So, like, this sort of stuff is right up his alley. So, like,
that's not
knowing,
okay.
No. I feel I shouldn't tell this story, but it's not mine to tell, but I'll tell it anyway, because I thought it was the funniest thing ever. He has the Michael Myers mask, and he dressed up like Michael Myers on Halloween and then went to the bank to make a deposit, and they would not let him in the bank.
Yes, that's correct.
You can't wear a mask to the bank like that.
That reminds me of the time that I was driving my kid to school one day, and I saw a hunter pop out of the woods with a shotgun over his shoulder. And he was like a half a block away from the school.
And you ran him over.
No. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but that's the end of the story. Don't spoil it. No, so I dropped my kid off at daycare, and then I came back through, and as I was passing the elementary school again, there was like five cops surrounding the guy.
Really?
Really?
It just hadn't occurred to him, probably shouldn't walk past the elementary school in the morning with a shotgun on my shoulder.
Wow, I thought that was going another way because you live in very gun-friendly New Hampshire. I figured they would have given him a high five and gone on their way.
There's limits. This is a protect your kids helicopter kind of area.
I was hoping you were going to end up with a big, like a mutton or a deer.
That would have been nice. Would you like a tenderloin? I would.
But, well, anyway, but the point I was making is that he does have a very sardonic way about, you know, not sardonic, but like dark side. And so, like, you know, so knowing that, I still was surprised by some of the stuff that happened in this. But after I read it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Jason. So, yeah.
So, well, here's what's interesting. I don't like horror movies, sort of just.
Yeah, neither do I. I hate them. Yeah.
And if this was a movie, I wouldn't watch it.
Right.
Yep.
But I really liked it in the, because I don't like the gore part. Like, it doesn't do anything for me. But when you take that out, same thing with The Walking Dead. Like, I don't watch The Walking Dead show because I don't need it. God. In this format, And in a comic book format, I think the genre works really well for me. I really like that. It's like a thriller. You know, it's got recognizable tropes and things in it. And then when I got to the end and I read his story that he told, where basically the cold open of this pretty much happened to him.
Yeah.
That made it work 10 times more.
I pointed out to make sure you read the little essay in the back, because as Josh says, he basically tells the story that he had this happen to him and the girl he was with, it was a man in a truck, and luckily the rope, it wasn't a chain, it was a rope, and it broke. And the girl was able to escape by putting the car in neutral and then rolling back down the hill back to where he was. And the guy, it's a really, really creepy story.
It's horrifying. It's totally horrifying. Yeah.
It's horrifying. Yeah. I can't even imagine going through that. I can't imagine not being completely horrified all the time. But I also kind of wish he just told that story. Like, I mean, I get that it's really horrible, but like, you know, adding the horror element, I was more creeped out by the story he told than I was the book itself.
Because it definitely has one of those, and Connor, yeah, you're gonna follow me right to this punchline.
Okay.
But that story definitely has a Robert Stack Unsolved Mysteries tone to it.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and
oh, totally.
Unsolved Mysteries, for those who don't know, deep in the iFanboy archives, is a favorite of both Connor and mine.
The thing is, though, you can't get it anymore, Ron, because every replay of it features the repackaged Dennis Farina version. They have completely excised, don't even get me started, they have completely excised Robert Stack from Unsolved Mysteries.
Like, it was just, don't even get me started, and then goes into it anyway.
I liked how in the middle of it, he was just like, he got all like verklempt. He's like, I can't even talk about it.
It's on like every day in Lifetime. Sometimes if I'm late for work, I catch the beginning of one episode, and it's for years, it's been the repackaged Dennis Farina. There's no more Robert Stack to be found.
It's a shame.
I know that like you like the original, but the Dennis Farina one doesn't sound, it sounds like there's some appeal to it. I was like, well, that's kind of good too.
He's a good idea, but they like, Robert Stack would walk around dark alleys in a trench coat telling his story.
With fog rolling in?
Yeah, Dennis Farina's in like a crime headquarters with a bunch of guys and fake computers in the back and giant monitors, and they have like Google Maps, you know, and like, it's not the same feeling.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have, his voice isn't quite as Robert Stacky.
Well, whose would be?
Yeah. Thanks, coming Ron, along, for bringing that up.
Well, on the heels of the actual horror story, it was all just too much for his psyche to take.
Yeah. No, but anyway, it's a really moving, really well written. I mean, I was riveted by the 2-page essay.
It's true.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry that happened to you, Jason. That's terrible.
I also know the girl in that story. She went to our high school as well, too.
So. It's important to note, in case we messed up, she did not get kidnapped. She escaped.
Yeah, no.
It's still terrible.
But that's the thing, is that story is a 2-page story. It's not a graphic novel. So I get giving it some sort of sensationalist kind of horror. Like, you know me, I don't like the demon. I don't like the horror. You know, right. I don't like the supernatural as much as anybody. But I bought it in this, you know, and like even, and he just never explains it. That's what I think is interesting about it, is that it just never gets explained.
And I get that telling the real story without the supernatural element just becomes, like Josh made a joke earlier, you know, a Kiefer Sutherland movie. There was a Kurt Russell one too that was like that.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Where, you know, husband and wife,
it was Kurt Russell,
break down in the desert and the wife gets kidnapped. Like, that's, we've seen that a couple of times in a couple of movies. So I get that.
Scary.
It's not as original. It's totally scary. It's not as original, but to me it's more impactful because I, you know, I'm less likely to run into a demon when I break down than I am.
Well, it's one of those roots level like human anxieties where you think, you know, like you walk around most, I mean, I do, it's my privilege. I walk around most of the time feeling relatively safe and secure or whatever. And like, horror for me comes from that sort of, wow, everything here can go tits up any second.
Right.
You know, like you're just inherently trusting the people around you or circumstances. You know, you go in the store, you leave them in the car, you come back, they're gone. Like, right. That's been horrifying. But the other thing I think is that, like, he said that this thing happened to him in 2001.
Yep.
And he just sat with it for years. I mean, it marks you. You think about it and, you know, come up with a story around it. That's what a writer does. So there's that grain of like, this happened, but what if, you know, what if this happened, how it plays out? And I don't know, that really added to it for me. That element, 100%. So that was cool.
It's really great to be recording this show in the middle of a really empty office. I don't feel freaked out at all. This book also reminded me, to go back to Unsolved Mysteries, that after years of watching Unsolved Mysteries, I have a healthy skepticism for any car on the road that's not like that's going to stop and help me. So now I just never.
Oh, can I tell you, to this day, I had a, it's not even a 2-page story. It's a paragraph story. But to this day, it still haunts me. I was back when we were in college, I was driving back to Ithaca from Long Island, and it was late. It was, you know, must have been, you know, like it was pitch black out. I was on
There's
a road.
Some lonely stretches of road there.
Yeah. And I was on a road from, Pennsylvania, and I was going right. And I'll never forget, I drove by and there was a car on the side of the road and somebody waving their hands, and I just kept on going. And for years I wondered, I'm like, shit, was that guy in trouble? Or was that like my New Yorker gut instinct was don't stop, don't stop, don't stop, you know? But then I was like, oh man, did that guy need help? Or was that the beginning of me getting murdered and I did the right thing? Like, I don't, to this day, I don't know what it was, but that one, like a dark stretch of road with no lights, and it's one of the scariest scenarios,
Ron,
ever.
Ron, that was me.
Oh,
son of a bitch.
I didn't want to say anything until now because it was so raw. Because the other thing is he just watched a bunch of Unsolved Mysteries.
But I was desperate. I'd been there for hours.
My last VHS tape, the tape had snapped. I had a little portable VHS player in the car. You know that's not true because Connor didn't drive then.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true. Exactly. There's no way he could have been in the mountains of Pennsylvania.
It's a really great sort of moral conundrum. Like, should I have helped? Did they need help? Yes.
Yeah.
But was that a good situation to do? Would that have been a good decision on my part? And I don't have an answer. My first instinct is to make fun of you for being selfish. But realistically, like, yeah, that's sketchy.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. And I hate that we live in a world where my first instinct wasn't to pull over and to go help. And my first instinct was to drive away as fast as possible for fear of my own life. But still, but I think that, and that might have been driven by watching a lot of Unsolved Mysteries while at college.
It's true. That show makes you think that every time you break down, you're toast.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
What's one of those things is that, like, so where I live, we were just talking about this, guns are a really big deal. Everybody has them. It's just a thing that's around here. And what I always think to myself is, yeah, but you live in like the safest place in the history of the world. Like if you think at any time during history, you were always sort of in danger. But right now we're all pretty good, but we kind of only think we are, you know, like all it takes is
you run the wrong person at the wrong time. Then
one mother and daughter team with a chain.
Right. And here's the interesting about this book is that it brings these ideas up. I think it's a really effective piece of writing and art that in that sense, because you know we don't often finish these discussions talking about moral quandaries and
that's a good point.
You never did that once when talking about
Starman. We didn't get deep enough in the run.
I gotta tell you, after reading this, I am not getting under anyone's car unless it's my own.
I'm not getting under anyone's car under any circumstances. Period.
Exactly. I'm not helping change a tire. What are you, crazy? No, you call AAA. You're going to kill me.
What you want to do is get four jack stands and place them all around.
There's going to be 18 jacks under that car.
Yeah. Just like it, and then ropes. Like it's not like you're going to be able to have several failures before you're hurt.
Listen, I'm scared enough to jack my own car and do it myself, much less to somebody else's.
That's definitely how you're going to go.
No, this brings up, and that's a good work makes you think, and it challenges you, and this kind of does it. And you know, and yes, there's a little supernatural element to it, but I think that the realness of the whole scenario and everything else that kind of happened gives you enough of that shudder, of that of that rattle to have it resonate. And so that's a sign of a good job. And I like, and again, you know, we're all on board with Greg Hinkle. I mean, it's been great to see Greg Hinkle's work grow to the point and get this stuff. And I want to see what's next. And I want to see what's, especially after reading Airboy and then reading this, to see what he does, you know?
Right.
Should be anything. I kind of don't want anyone to ever color him.
Yeah.
I'm worried that that's a thing that shouldn't happen. Like
Matt Wilson style flat color.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's the book he'd be working on anyway.
Yeah. All right. So any final thoughts on The Rattler?
It's interesting. You've got guys, pretty much all of us, none of us are horror people.
Yep.
This story worked for all of us in comic book format. So, and we don't ever talk about horror. So I assume that to horror people, we just sound like incredible amateurs. Cause it's like, yes, those are the tropes. That's correct.
We sound like frightened teenagers driving through Pennsylvania.
Yep, but that's I didn't actually know where this was going to go, especially with Connor's preamble. Is Connor going to say he didn't like it?
No,
I was kind of.
Normally, it's like when a book we know, I didn't know what you guys were going to think of it. So.
Well, so coming out of that, would you, going back to the original question, would you heartily recommend this to somebody?
Yes.
Yes.
If they like horror, thriller, crime.
Right.
Absolutely. It's a nice 104-page story, really great art from Greg Hinkle, really compelling writing from Jason McNamara because it comes from a real place. It's a really well-done piece.
I don't mean this to demean it, but it's an easy read.
Yeah, I've read it fast. I read it real fast in one sitting.
Yeah, I read it in one sitting, and it was, and like, not like I didn't read it fast. I was skipping around a bit, but like I felt like I got a good satisfying chunk out of it. But it didn't go on too long. It didn't drag out. I think there was a great economy of storytelling in it, that it tells just enough and showed just enough, and the key beats like the rockabilly guy getting killed like really worked. So
you said, you know, this isn't his first book. He's been making books for a while in this format, so it shows.
Here you go. So the little bio in the background for Joel Enos says, Joel would run the other way if someone tried to help him on the road, no matter how nice they seemed. So there you go.
Yep, there it is. I'm not alone. Maybe it's something about both of our Long Island upbringing that makes us feel that way.
All right, so you can check out The Rattler. It's in graphic novel form. You can get it also for, you know, in digital forms. It's out now. It's relatively new. It came out about a month ago.
It came out in March.
Oh, really?
Yeah, earlier this year.
That's right. That's right. It did.
Yeah.
It came out well earlier. It came out this year. But so check it out. If you want to talk about The Rattler, you go to fanboy.com. That's where you can find a post on this show. That's where also you can find our weekly podcast, the Pick of the Week podcast, where Josh, Ron, and I talk about the week's comics. and a whole bunch of special edition shows are there as well. All that fun stuff's happening at fanboy.com. Any final thoughts? Anything else to say?
No, good pick. Good pick. I look forward to our next one. It's like
the Rantler.
It's like we got a little book club.
I'm a little sad it's not a G.I. Joe book. Like 5%.
The Rantler.
Wasn't the Rattler's a vehicle? It's not even a person.
Yeah, it's a vehicle.
It's a blue A-10 Warthog. Yeah. The difference between it and a regular plane, because it was pretty much straight up, is that the wings would turn.
Turn, yeah, to VTOL.
It could vertically land to take off. Yeah.
There he is. Yeah. I heard that. Nice work.
Yeah.
So until next time, so next month you can look forward to a Talksplode episode. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
You didn't say you're the Rattler.
Wow, I blew that.